And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. G. Edward Griffin with us this hour. We'll take your calls in a moment. Ed, myth number five. You ready?
I am. Yes. Everyone
should be tested because that makes it possible to quarantine those who are contagious, and that will save lives.
Yes, boy, you hear that every day, don't you?
We sure do.
Yes, well, you're selfish if you don't get a vaccine because you're going to endanger my children who have vaccines.
Well, and here's my question. If you have the vaccine, you shouldn't be able to get the disease.
That's right. But they don't think that thing through. And there are actually two issues in this myth. The first one really is sort of similar to the first myth because it involves herd immunity. The idea about quarantining effective people may reduce the speed of contagion. And that's true, but not the death rate. The quarantines increase the death rate because they delay herd immunity, which is what brings out, you know, all the pandemics come to a close because of that. But now for the testing and that, about that. Testing for those with no symptoms, just taking a look at that. There was a report, a study that came out of China's own governmental labs a few months ago, right after the peak of the COVID-19 hit in China. And it said amazingly, Frank, that 80% of the tests that were done on the people with that they suspected we had the disease, 80% of them produced a false positive. 80%.
That's huge.
That's huge. Yes. Of course, what happened is that was translated and published in the United States on PubMed, and there it was. That's how everybody found it. And of course, immediately the powers that be said, "Oh, you can't put that up there," and they forced PubMed to withdraw the paper. So they did. If you go to PubMed now, you'll see the summary of it there, but the paper itself has been withdrawn. Now notice the word withdrawn. That doesn't mean anything except they took it down. There was no question about the data being good, or no question about the style of analyzing the data or anything like that. It's just that they withdrew it because it became controversial. And solution was unacceptable, but the methods of analysis and everything were good, and the report still remains. Those tests, the standard tests, produce an 80% false positive. So that in itself should tell you that all this nonsense about get tested, is nothing but a drive to produce more and more quote cases end quote of coronavirus. The more people that test, let's say if everybody gets tested, that'll show 80% of the people in the world will have the virus. And even the ones that don't have it will have it, 80%. Huh. So it's insane. Well, back to that again, it's not insane. To me, it's all calculated.
Myth number six. We touched on it a bit. Everyone should be vaccinated because unvaccinated people spread diseases.
Yeah. Well, the truth of the matter is those who are vaccinated, it's true, they may be immune to a disease, but they still carry and spread the pathogens, the same as those who are not vaccinated. And just because they're immune to it doesn't mean that they don't have the viruses or whatever those things are on their bodies, because they do. It just means that they don't care because they're immune to them. They get along fine with them. So the vaccinated people are just as much a carrier as the unvaccinated people. And the unvaccinated person is no more of a carrier than those who are vaccinated. And so forcing the unvaccinated to accept vaccines will not further protect those who already are immune. Now, you have a lot of studies that prove that. If anybody wants to go on the internet, just splash around and look for measles studies, for instance. You'll find cases where school breakouts happened, where 98% of all the students were fully vaccinated. And yet there was a huge measles breakout.
Yep, exactly.
And another case where the breakout was traced to a fully vaccinated student. So a fully vaccinated student is the one that started the measles breakout in that school, not somebody who was unvaccinated.
I bet you got the polio vaccine when you were a kid, right?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
If you did, I did. Yeah. I've got a monkey virus in me called simian, which is dangerous.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Well, that explains everything, George.
That's right. That's why I am what I am.
Well, I don't know whether I got the polio. I know I got everything else. But, yeah, I remember it wasn't so bad. Yeah, I got a little sick. But I've been sicker than that just from a cold or eating some food that I shouldn't have eaten, and that kind of thing. So it was not too
bad. What would you say to someone who lines some? See, I never get the flu shot, but I don't tell people not to. It's their business.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you personally, would you get the vaccine when it comes out for this coronavirus?
No, I guess not. No. They would have to hold me down. They would have to force me. Because
I'm in your camp. Same way.
I would not voluntarily accept a vaccine. And I've been in that mode for quite a few years, even before I've learned so much of these this data and all of these studies. I didn't know all of this, but I just had an instinct for it. I felt it wasn't a good idea.
I got to tell you, when I was in the Navy, they gave us cholera shots, and my arm swelled up for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Well, you were lucky because some people died from that, you know.
I know that. Myth number seven. Vaccines are based on more than 200 years of science and experience. It is foolish to question their safety or effectiveness.
Well, you hear that all the time. But the truth is, in my view, that vaccine science may have been founded on sound concepts at one time.
And maybe some vaccines are okay.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Give whatever you have to give to the past tense, to the past. In the past few decades, it's a whole different story. It has become tainted. The whole industry has become tainted with conflicts of interest and political agendas.
And profit.
And profit. I think it's foolish to trust any product from this industry today. Now, here's a fun couple of facts. The vaccine industry pays the media, the major media outlets, $5.4 billion per year in advertising. Now, that's probably their largest client. And that's one of the reasons that the media will never come out and say anything or publish anything that hurts their source of income.
Maybe that explains why I don't get any vaccine money from Big Pharma on this show.
Yeah, I suspect that might have something to do with it.
They don't advertise on this program.
Yeah, and now nobody really knows how much money for sure goes from the vaccine industry into the pockets of legislators. We do know that the vaccine industry is perhaps the first or the second largest lobbying group. And the whole industry went rogue, I think. The year was about 1989, when the United States Congress passed a law to give immunity to the vaccine industry for any damages that might occur as a result of their vaccines. Congress passed a law. It doesn't make any difference.
That's right. Protects them.
Protects them. The kids can get, or adults can get sick, they can be maimed, they can be crippled, they can get all kinds of neurological diseases, they can be in an iron lung for life, or they have to walk around on crutches, or they can die. Makes no difference. If anybody wants to sue to get recompense for that, they go to what is called the Vaccine Injury Court, and they try their case there, and if they win their case, and a lot of them do, the U.S. taxpayers have to pay them, not the vaccine industry. And so the media never reports any of this.
Of course, the fact is
that hundreds of millions of dollars a year are paid to the parents and family of vaccine-injured people.
So, it's unbelievable. And again, you know, I'll never tell anybody not to get a vaccine. That's their business. But on the day that comes, Ed, when they have a vaccine for this virus,
yeah,
I want people who have had the shot to call the program and tell me what they're going through. How do they feel? Are they sick? Do they feel healthy? Any backlash?
Yes.
We'll find out. Myth number eight, and then we'll go to calls. When the COVID-19 lockdown finally is lifted, life will return to normal. Please tell me yes. Please.
Well, it depends on how you define normal. They're using a new phrase now. It's called the new normal.
The new normal.
The new normal. And that's what they mean when they say normal. We know what they mean because they're now telling us openly. In fact, if on our website, Need to Know News and Red Pill University, we have links to, first of all, Governor Newsom of California. He's one, but the governors of many states. Let's see the states. I got a list of them here: California, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Massachusetts, Oregon, and Washington are all on record telling us, in their own words, that the normal will not return unless there is in place something called contact tracing, That means a surveillance system where people will be coming to your door, knocking on your door. You have to answer it. You have to answer questions. You have a fever today. Have you been in contact with somebody? Tell us who you've been in contact with. And then is that normal?
It's like the Gestapo.
Yes, that's what they mean by normal. And they will not lift the lockdown until a contact tracing system of surveillance is in place.
And what are they going to do, board up your house so you can't get out?
They could do that, yes.
Or they assign somebody to stand outside your door?
No, I think what they would probably do is just take you away.
Or take, well, no, they, I think they want to keep you in your house locked in there.
Well, I think what they want you to do is voluntarily do that, so that they may have to take a few people out and make examples of them, so they scare everybody else into doing it without
me. Now, let me ask you this, Edby, and the calls are lining up here for you. Why in God's name is it happening this way? What's your gut telling you?
Well, my gut tells me that it's probably the best way, from their point of view, to make it happen. I think they were depending. Well, first of all, let's back up. We have to realize who are they doing this. Well,
and when you say make it happen, what do you mean by it?
I'm talking about world dominion.
Okay.
World control over every human being.
That's what I thought.
An elite. Now, if you and I were on that side, and we were at the round table to make the decisions, then we'd have to say, well, how do we do this? You know, we've got to get people, by billions of them, to do this voluntarily, mostly. We can't force them all at the point of a bayonet. We might have to do that for a few to scare the others, but we want them all to do it voluntarily. How do we do this? Well, they've known the answer to that for decades, probably over 100 years or so, and the tactic has always been to scare the people into such a state that they'll accept anything.
Absolutely.
As a means of protecting themselves against this horrible threat, whatever it is, an invasion by an enemy, whether it's terrorism or whether it's a plague.
Remember the movie Network?
Yes, of course.
Howard Beale?
Yes.
Mad as hell, not going to take it anymore?
Yeah.
Just leave us alone. Give us our telly and our toasters and our radial tires and don't touch us. Leave us alone. Well, that's what's happening to people right now.
Yeah. Right. Well, anyway, so we would say that the best way to get people to give up their liberties and their privacy and say, well, it's okay, is to make them think it's for their own good. And so that's the secret. That's the key.
And you turn others against others. And that's what's happening now, too.
Yeah, divide and conquer and make you feel it's for your own good and you're a good citizen if you obey. Those are the things that get you to convince you in your own mind that this is the right thing to do or the necessary thing to do, and then you will do it voluntarily.
Yes, you will.
That's it.
Let's go to Dustin east of the Rockies in Tennessee to get us started. Hi, Dustin.
How's it going?
Good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, I was actually calling in. I'm a delivery driver. I deliver pizzas. And during this whole COVID-19, I have not worn a mask. None of my coworkers have worn masks. None of us have came down with the COVID-19.
Do your customers freak out when you show up at the door without a mask?
Some do, but we have the option of no contact, which pretty much is like they've already paid for the order. We just drop it off their door and
knock on the doorbell and walk away. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
It's an interesting. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are saying, you know, I know one person who has had the coronavirus. One person, Ed, he was an assistant manager at a restaurant. He was quarantined. He went in the hospital. He's okay. But that's it. I mean, I don't know how many people know people who have had it or, God forbid, have died from it.
Well, George, I think that more people have had the virus and still have it than you might guess.
And don't even know it.
Of course, that's it. Most people have no symptoms whatsoever, but they do have the virus. It's a nothing burger for most people. It just is of concern for very old people or those who have other conditions where their immune systems are weakened. Now they are in danger. But the average person, if his immune system is up and he's healthy, it's no more than the season.
Aren't those people also, I was going to say, aren't those people who have weakened immune systems and also previous ailments like heart conditions, aren't they susceptible to the seasonal flu too that could kill them?
Yes, they are. And as a matter of fact, it's something we just published in our news today, that the latest death statistics in the United States, they're just published for the first 4 months. they're exactly the same percentage as it has been since 2017 is the time frame that they used. In other words, the total deaths in America has not gone up at all in the last 4 months. So what's happening with all these people dying of coronavirus? Figure it out. Those people are dying of something else. They're just being re-diagnosed as coronavirus. But if you had the truth, you would know that, well, those people are dying of pneumonia or heart disease or something, you know, something else.
And do you know how many people combined, heart ailments, cancer, accidents, murders, flu, how many die every day from all of these deaths? It's got to be in the thousands and thousands.
Yes, and they're all being relabeled, not all, but most of them are being relabeled now as COVID deaths. You know, I ran across this years ago during the AIDS epidemic, so-called. I was scared to death like everybody else. But then after about a year went by, and I was told that Africa was really being damaged by, ravaged by the AIDS virus, and they were dying like flies there, and if it keeps going, why, there'll be nobody left in Africa. Well, about a year later, I saw some statistics almost by accident. I looked at all these horrible death rates from AIDS. I thought, this is terrible. Look at all these people, tens of thousands, another 100,000 there. And then I looked at the total death rate for all of Africa for that period, and the total deaths hadn't changed from the previous 5 years at all. So how could millions more be dying of AIDS, and yet the total death didn't go up? And it suddenly became clear to me it was all through fraudulent diagnosis. They were dying of the same things as before, but now they were just calling them.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Mayette's with us in New York. Hi, Mayette. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I think it's important to take a larger view in this respect. I heard George. I didn't hear her live, but according to Tom, about 2008, Evelyn Paglini. We lost her a few years ago, but I tell you, a chill went up my spine when George played that clip where she said that in 2020, a mysterious pneumonia would be unleashed on everybody. And George repeated to her to be more specific. Also, put that together with Dr. Fauci, who on this podcast, PRN program, Geoengineering Watch, George, you know Dean Whittington.
Yep.
Dr. Fauci, in 2017, very affirmatively said that there would be a pandemic coming during the Trump administration. Okay, that's going under the radar.
Yeah, he said that. We said that on the air and reported that exactly. You are so correct. Back in 2017, he said this administration will be here during a major pandemic. Unbelievable. We'll be back with final calls with G. Edgar Griffin in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, G. Edward Griffin with us. His websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com, including his new one, redpilluniversity.org. And tell us about Red Pill University, Ed.
Boy, I sure would love to do that, so I'll try and make it short.
Okay.
But to me, Red Pill University is the solution to all of the problems we've been talking about. Now, that's a bold statement. It may even sound silly. But once you understand what the university is, it sounds a little more reasonable. First of all, it's not the kind of a brick-and-mortar university that we think of when we use the word. This is a university, sort of an open university. It doesn't really exist in a physical place. Right now, it exists primarily in cyberspace, although we are in the process of building local campuses, and we want to have a campus of active people, small groups of somewhere between 12 and maybe 50 or 60 in every county in the United States, boots on the ground to make things happen. But primarily, it's a website, too, where we have all the information we've been talking about tonight on coronavirus and so many other topics as well are on that website and highly indexed videos, most of them, and very professionally done. It's great sources of information, you know, a great search option, so you can put in any word you're interested in. If you want to know about herd immunity, for example, as we're talking about, there it is. So it's a combination right now of a cyberspace source of information, but what it really is, George, is we're building a movement. This is not just a place to go and get some more information. You get to a point, some of his old war horses, where you say, okay, we've been there, we know that, and we learned a few things, but we got the picture. What are we going to do about it? That's the main thing. So this is the open-end funnel. This is the beginning of building a movement of something to do about it. And I sort of gave away the clue a moment ago when I said building local campuses, because we've got to have boots on the ground. We've got to have local organizations where people can meet eyeball to eyeball, just the opposite of being, you know, a lockdown is one of the reasons I think they're doing this lockdown is because they don't want people to meet with each other and to get organized and to do things. They want them in their homes or in their workplaces and that kind of thing. Well, we're just taking the opposite approach. We want people to get together and to know each other and to form groups and to get things done in their local community. That's how you build a real movement. I won't go into much more detail, but if you get the idea that we are building a movement, not just an informational service, and we have a very set, precise statement of principles. We feel that, you know, it's easy to be against something, but what are you for? I've seen in my lifetime, I've seen a lot of movements start where people were against something. Well, we don't like these people did that. We don't like that. Well, let's form. Let's get together. Everybody who doesn't like it, raise your hand and we'll form a group. And so that's how they start. They know what they're against. But then all of a sudden, as the weeks and months and maybe the years roll on, they find out that there are divisions among them. Some people don't really believe in free enterprise. Some people really don't believe in freedom of expression. You know, some people really are the collective and so forth. They know what they agree on one thing, but they don't have the same principles. Well, we have principles and we have structure and that kind of thing. So that's what Red Pill University is all about. And I would urge anybody that wants to take that step beyond just knowing about a problem and meeting up with other people of like mind and creating some kind of activity at the local levels as well, then by all means, come to redpilluniversity.org and bring a cup of coffee or something and plan to spend a little time, maybe, you know, 45 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, something like that. Splash around. I think you'd be very happy with what you see.
Super. First-time caller Bob is with us in Littleton, Colorado. Hey, Bob, thanks for calling, sir. Welcome to the program. Hey, Bob? No. Bob is not with us anymore. Oh, well. Let's go to Tom in La Jolla, California. He's there.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. And Ed Griffin, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I'm going to modify my question, if I may. Comment and then a question. The Federal Reserve, which you are an expert on, appears to monitor the economy very closely. And to the Federal Reserve, information is power. And one of the easiest ways to obtain usable information is to steal it. And I, you know, to me, I see a connection between the Federal Reserve, Wall Street banking, and the intelligence agencies, and in particular, the State Department. And which brings me to my question. In your opinion, in your professional opinion, Ed, who is pulling the strings on the Federal Reserve? Almost 80 years ago, the New York Times would print the Class A stockholders of the Federal Reserve. There appeared to be Class A stockholders in this cartel. But now, in 2020, in your opinion, who is pulling the strings of the Federal Reserve? And again, I want to thank you for everything you do, Ed.
Well, okay, thanks for that question. I wish you hadn't asked it, because I have to start off by saying, quite frankly, I don't know. But you did give me a back door. You said, in your opinion, so here I go.
Who are the puppet masters, Ed?
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't think the Class A or Class B stock has much to do with it. I think that's more of an administrative thing. Now, I could be wrong on that. I remember in the early days at the formation level of the Fed, there was an article that appeared in the New York Times about Class A and Class B stockholders, and some of those people were just wealthy investors. Now, but I don't think that necessarily means anything in today's world about power. Power, I think, in the Federal Reserve system, as in politics, does not come from holding stock. I think it comes from personal relationships, clandestine groupings. I think it comes from organizations like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberger Group. I think there might even be a very generous portion of occult groups in there. I don't know for sure, but I smell that everywhere I go. I kind of smell the incense, you might say, of this occult quality. But all of this, I think, points to the, like any cartel, it's easier if we approach this from the point of view of what is the Fed. Well, first of all, it's a cartel. It's just no different than a banana cartel or an oil cartel. Happens to be a banking cartel. And if you look at any other cartel and ask the same question, who's pulling the strings? The answer is pretty clear, and that's the biggest members of the cartel, the ones that have the biggest strings to pull. Well, so who are those in the Fed? Well, those are the biggest banks, the ones with the most tradition and the most power, the most assets, most political power, too. Don't forget that part. So we're looking at the biggest banks. But then we have to look beyond that because the Federal Reserve is part of a larger structure. You know, in Basel, Switzerland, they all get together, all the central banks around the world. And then we've got the IMF to throw into the mix. And we know that this is really part of a global conglomerate of international banking interests. It's kind of a fraternity. And who are the biggest players there? Well, we don't know. I've never been invited to those meetings, so I don't really know. But I have a feeling, again, it's the ones with the biggest strings to pull. Who's got the biggest string to pull? Well, that would be the Rothschild family, and the Rockefellers would be right behind that. So I think that's a pretty good guess. We got two big ropes there to pull. Do we have to go further? I don't know. And finally, you get to the question and you say, well, why am I worried about this? What difference does it make? We still have to get that thing off of our backs. We still have to abolish the Federal Reserve. We have to get them out of the business of making our money for us. We've got to return money to a sound basis and so forth. So finally, I come to the conclusion, well, I don't know for sure, but I think it's the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. That's probably the two main central points. But then I say, so what? Let's get on with the job and abolish the darn thing.
The United States got hit the most with this coronavirus situation, Ed, even though it's a worldwide situation. Why are they trying to fix something that really isn't broken? Now, of course, all governments aren't perfect by any means. Our freedoms weren't perfect by any means, but it worked. Why try to change it?
Well, I think this is probably one of the most controversial things that any of us can say. And, of course, I've noticed that on your program, nobody's afraid to say it. But out there in the bigger world, anybody that says that there is a power group, a hidden group that's reaching for global control, you know, you'd have a lot of skepticism to deal with. But I think that's the truth. And if you're talking about that group, they're not trying to fix anything. Their interest is not in fixing the system. Their interest is in breaking the system. Why would they want to break the system? Well, they've written about it. They've written books on it, for gosh sake. This all came to a head with the socialist group in Great Britain, the Fabian Society. They talked about it a lot. They had a stained glass window that depicted the members of the group smashing the earth with hammers on an anvil. And then they had a quote from some poetry, I think it was Omar Khayyam, that said something about, wouldn't you and I conspire to make, well, I've forgotten the quote now, I should have prepared for it, but anyway, to make the world, to hammer the world to bits and remold it closer to the heart's desire, that's the line. Would we not smash it to bits and remold it more to the heart's desire? And that is a political strategy that these people have used for decades, which is if you want to build this new world order, as they like to call it, you have to smash the old order first. So they're not trying to fix anything. They're trying to break everything. And until you understand that this crisis, this destruction, is not accidental, it's not a mistake, it's exactly according to their plan, then you don't understand how to fix it.
So you think they have taken advantage of a coronavirus pandemic, or do you think they created the pandemic?
Well, okay, again, do I think? I think they created the pandemic. I don't think we really have a pandemic, so they created it in the minds.
In the minds, but what about releasing the virus into the public?
Well, that's another question. Did they really want to kill off a couple of million people? I wouldn't put it past these people, but I have to ask myself, that would mean, well, why would they do that if they thought they were susceptible to it? That would mean that they had to have some kind of a protection for themselves.
For themselves.
Yeah.
And that's possible.
I don't know.
They have made an antidote when they made the virus. Who knows?
Well, it's possible, yeah. So that's an unknown. But if they had an antidote and they thought they could protect themselves, then I don't think they'd hesitate at all, because they boasted of the fact and proclaimed the fact that they want to reduce the world population by about 80% or something like that. So let's go.
And you know what? It doesn't affect infrastructure.
No, it doesn't.
The buildings still stay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's go next to Cornelius in Louisiana. Hello there, Mr. White.
Hello, George and Mr. Griffin there. George, you've been right on top of this, and Mr. Griffin, I love Thomas from La Jolla, but this crisis was created so they could take over, and you're right. We need to get in these smaller groups and stuff. George, I want to salute you, too, because you always mention the inmates and how much trouble they're having in the federal system, and we lost another inmate, and they're getting sick, or correctional officers down there in Oakdale, Louisiana. So please pray for the people down there in Oakdale at our Federal Correctional Institute. My question for you, and I don't know if you're a God-believing man, will this be the mark of the beast if they make everybody take this vaccine? Will they force us to take the vaccine? And that's my question. God bless you, gentlemen.
And can they force us, Ed?
Well, I guess they can physically. I mean, if they come to your house
with a satchel and a doctor and a couple armed guards.
Yeah. If they have a SWAT team there, they can force you to take a vaccine.
Do they know how many people have supported the Second Amendment in this country? That if they just show up at somebody's house and try to barge in to give you a vaccine, what they're going to be confronted by?
Yeah, I think they've taken all of that into consideration, and they figure that it's a phase they have to go through.
I don't think local police officers will enforce any kind of order like that. I think when it comes down to it, they're going to be on our side.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. I hope we have more constitutional sheriffs standing up for the rights of their citizens right now. Where are these people right now, these sheriffs, you know? There are, several, maybe three or four or five so far that said, this is unconstitutional. We're not going to deny constitutional rights to the people in my county. I'm not going to do that because I was sworn an oath to the Constitution. Where are all the rest of the sheriffs? You know, this is the time for them to show what they're made of.
Well, it sure is. And we've got just about 40 seconds left. Mention the red pill again.
Yes, thanks for that, George. Come on by and visit us at redpillexpo.org. And if you want to see the pamphlet on the items that we talked about today, the myths, that's redpillexpo.org/COVID-myth.
Now, I also have redpilluniversity.org. Will that work?
What did I say?
You said Red Pill Expo.
Yeah, we've got that site too, but I meant to say Red Pill University. Thank you.
I'm always here to watch your back, Eddie.
Yeah, thank you. But stop by the Red Pill Expo too, because we're going to have our next expo at Jekyll Island, if we can, in November of this year.
Super. And, of course, we've got everything linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, we're going to talk about the spirit world right here on Coast to Coast AM. So don't touch your dial.